X7A. Number 1B.
One of the interesting things is, and I'm quite honest with you, I told you I can't give you a perfect picture. I'm quite honest. But as near as possible, you know, we should be able to distinguish two uses of the term idea in Mrs. Eddy's writings. Sometimes she uses the term idea in a way that could never be put into the plural. And she uses sometimes the term idea, which could be put into the plural, and therefore very often uses the plural of idea, namely ideas. What is the difference? The difference is tremendous. And I felt in discussing Christian Science with Christian scientists of high standard in the subject that they never quite have seen the nature of the term idea, which cannot be put into the plural. And because they can't see that, they are interested in people. I am so sure that there is a terrific thing there which a student of Christian Science must see very, very clearly. And it is another interesting thing about this, about idea that cannot be put into the plural and idea that is in the plural or can be put into the plural. Namely this, that those references which are in the singular are mostly in the last three chapters of the textbook. Nearly 50% of all the references on idea are in the last three chapters of the first 16 chapters. I always call 16 chapter to Apocalypse, and I leave out the chapter glossary and fruitage because they don't really belong to the teaching of the system and the structure of the textbook. So that if she would show, or if she would tell and say, look here, I bring thought slowly, slowly from chapter 1 to chapter 12 or 11, and then I make thought ready to accept really my teaching in recapitulation, in Genesis, and in Apocalypse. And in that Apocalypse, she just puts all in what she knows about idea. Completely different than in any other chapter. Whereas those references on ideas are mostly in the other chapters, and none of them in the chapter of Apocalypse. Now, you can say this is a quantitative analysis. Well, yes, it's a quantitative analysis, because quantity is always a quality. In our subject, you can, in most cases, weigh the nature of a teaching through the quantitative use of important terms, like here, idea, which shows when she uses idea in singular, it culminates, so to say, in the last three chapters, and especially in the last chapter where she just pours it over. And when she speaks about ideas in the plural, she not even mentions ideas in the plural once in Apocalypse. So you can listen what happens there in that last chapter. That the whole subject is developed, devolves, and through every chapter we drop something of the human and of the limited sense and the corporeal sense of being, until finally she can let the cat out of her bag and say, here it is, now you have it. We don't need to think that right from the first sentence she gives you the whole cake. She prepares thought and prepares thought and prepares thought that finally thought is able to accept what she wants to say. Therefore, one of the most interesting study one can make is to go and take the concordance and look up all the references. Naturally, it's much better if one looks them up chronologically and not as they appear in the concordance, where they are not put down chronologically, so that one can follow how Mrs. Eddy uses the term mind in the first chapter, in the second chapter, in the third chapter, and so on, so that one gets a spiritual evolution of the term idea. And it's good if one does that, if one begins to classify one's findings from the textbook, so that one begins to see the nature of idea. So what I want to do is just to give a survey of such a study, hoping that through talking a lot from various angles, perhaps something in a spiritual way becomes a life that you suddenly see, oh, golly, this is what she means with idea. What does she mean with idea? I think if I would try to summarize in my own terms out of those many, many, many references on idea and would say, now, what does she really mean with idea, which can only be used in the singular, like the Christ idea? You can't use the Christ ideas. Huh? It's the Christ is the idea of God. Christ is not the ideas of God. You somehow hear it spiritually that something is possible and the other one is not possible. If I would try to summarize it, I would say the idea of God is actually showing the infinite one in its operation. In its operation by showing that the infinite has an idea. The infinite always has an idea, singular. What is this idea? It is that when the infinite conceives of a plan, programs that plan, processes that plan, and fulfills that plan. I think that's what the infinite has in mind. That's the idea of the infinite. So the idea of the infinite, the idea of God, is that what God in his mind, and if we leave out God and we just say mind, it is what mind really conceives as its plan, as what it wants to achieve. But it's not only what it conceives as what it wants to achieve, but the idea is much bigger than that. It is also programming that idea. It's also processing it, executing that program, and not only executing, also fulfilling it. That's the idea of God. It is as if it would be a fourfold operation, all combined in the term idea. So you can see what actually is meant by the fact that we say God has an idea. It means that the divine mind, that primordial conception of the infinite, that's the divine mind, that primeval conception that mind has, is that mind has something in view, has an aim, a purpose, a plan in view, conceives of that plan, programs that plan, knows exactly how to arrive at the fulfillment of that plan. So it programs that plan. It executes that plan until it comes to the point of complete fulfillment of that plan. And that's the idea of God. Golly, think of it. If we go back to our statement which Mrs. Eddy makes, that she says, from the infinite one comes what? One principle and its infinite idea. Boo! What is going on in the universe? Nothing goes on what we think should go on. Nothing is going to be demonstrated what we think should be demonstrated. Nothing is going to be fulfilled what we think should be fulfilled. All that is going on is that the one principle says, mind your own business, you people. I'm the boss, I'm the one and only principle of being, and I have an idea. I, principle, have an idea. And therefore that which principle has set out to do, through its conception, through its power, through its execution or fulfillment of that idea, that's the only thing that is ever going on. And everything that tries to interfere with that idea will fall to the ground. You can just see how people have to abdicate and say, okay, boss, you do it. Huh? So one can see how very different the science and metaphysics of Christian Science is compared with any other metaphysical school. Because any other metaphysical school says, here I am, here I have a problem, here I have a wish, here I have a desire. I want to demonstrate this and that and the other. And in order to demonstrate, I use mind over matter. But it is mind, small m, over matter. And some try to use capital mind over matter. And are most disillusioned that they don't make their demonstration, because they can't. Because the divine mind says, I'm not going to fulfill your wishes. I'm not here to be your slave. and you your master, and you can say to the divine mind, go and do and make this. The divine mind says, I have an idea, but that idea is perfect. And so the whole attitude of a Christian scientist changes from ordinary metaphysics and takes the attitude of the one principle working out its idea. Its idea. If we see it this way, you know, life becomes so big, because then we are no more putting forward our wishes, our desires, how we would like to have it, what we think would be divine, what we think would be only right, what we think we should demonstrate. We drop all that, and that's why it needs courage. Christian Science needs courage. Jesus had courage. He had that courage and said, thy will, not mine, will be done. He had that courage of changing his standpoint, his system of reference from the human to the system of reference to the divine, and said, you do it. From the infinite one comes one principle, and principles, infinite idea, and their demonstration, but not our demonstration. So if we have that courage and humility, that humility that says, not what I want to fulfill should be done, and to have that courage to go out into the unknown, so to say, because we do not know what the infinite mind is going to do with us. We do not know. And it needs that trust that we know that if we trust that one mind, that it only can do the best according to the standard of the divine mind, but not the best according to the standard of the human evaluation. That needs courage. It needs that courage where we really feel, let God do with us what he wants to do. Let the divine principle do with us what he wants to do, no matter what happened. Then we let the idea work. So, I don't know, but you have made all your experience in Christian Science. I have been in it, and I can think over 60 years back in Christian Science, and I know how a boy I would go to the Christian Science Sunday school, and I would hear the talks of the Christian scientists. It was all wishful thinking. All were hoping that this and that would happen, which they felt would be wonderful if it would happen. And all tried with all their earnesty and with all their heart to make God a slave for them. And he had to do what the master of personal sense was telling them to do and to fulfill it. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. Thank God it doesn't work. You know, it needs only a little thing. And then one has all the courage one needs to have. Terrific courage one gets. Just out of one little thing one has to be clear. And that is to see that the so-called idea, which is not an idea, which we have about deity, which we have about perfection, which we have about the climax of being, is so small compared with the idea that divine mind has about us. And if we can see that our sense of good is not the maximum of good, that it's just very tiny, just little, just nothing, just ordinary. Because our human sense cannot expand wide enough to take in the idea of the divine mind. And if we see that, then we have the courage and say, well, then why should I take the smaller if I can have the bigger? Only because it does not fit into the common sense. Just because it does not fit into the human picture of the world, shouldn't I take it? Because it will not fit into the human picture. It will be something much bigger than that. And that's the only courage we have, we must bring up. But when we see, you see, that the divine mind has a much bigger idea than any human conception of good could formulate, then we also have the courage to go into that adventure of the divine mind leading us all along the way. Where every day we say, all right, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow, and I'm not going to plan what should happen tomorrow and how it should happen. I let the divine mind speak through me and let the divine mind use me so that mind's own infinite idea is going to fulfill itself. Then I have understood something about idea. And you see, I didn't take in any sense of people, of men. And this, we'll see tomorrow, is really the big thing. what we learn from the Christian Science textbook as we go along from chapter to chapter to chapter, that we find out that finally what she wants to teach us is that we should not think about God and man, but about principle and its infinite idea. And nobody loses anything by losing the term man. Nothing. Except a lot of hell. That's the only thing we lose. It's just a matter. Can you see? It's just a matter of being clear and simple and pure about our categories. It's all that matters. Man is a family name. It's not the idea. But God has an idea. And that idea is the infinite idea. And what God wants to demonstrate is its own infinite idea. He does not want to demonstrate man. We want to demonstrate man, but not God, not the divine mind. The divine mind wants to demonstrate its idea. And in order to demonstrate its idea, the divine mind uses all ideas of reality. He does not use people and things. He uses all the ideas of reality, meaning all those values and diversified values of being, in order to bring out the idea, that which mind has in view. That's the idea. And therefore we can see, we should have a few weeks together. And then we could see how that idea is ruling the whole universe. That idea is therefore that which is in the majority and rules the minority. That idea is so big, because it belongs to God and is therefore the infinite, that it is the bigger than all the people and all the thinkers and all the philosophers and all the whoever was on this planet. Therefore, out of that concept, there is evolution going on, because the infinite has an idea. Thought has developed through the ages. And even if it was only one who could catch that idea, that was more powerful than anything else. Because one with God is a majority. So one can feel, can you feel? I just tried now somehow to build up the atmosphere. That what Mrs. Eddy drives at and really presents then when she comes to the chapter on Apocalypse is to show that actually nothing is ever going on in the whole world but that one principle and its infinite idea, no matter if that appears as heaven or if it appears as the red dragon, if it appears as the wedding of the lamb and the bride or what it is, or if it appears as the seven vials full of the last plagues, it's always, she says, always it's the idea that is working. There is no more dualism there in that last chapter. The moment we begin to see God has an idea, and that's all there is. Principle and idea is one. And it turns out to be as simple as that. But naturally, one can only see the simplicity of it, that's quite clear, if one has that humility and courage, that meekness and courage, to let the divine idea control us and rule us. I remember John Dolly always said that Jesus was Mrs. Eddy said that Jesus was the meekest man that ever trod the globe or something like that. And then John Dolly said, and that meekness he stated when he said, I and the Father are one. That's a meekness statement. Because if I and the Father are one, then one is humanly nothing more, nothing anymore. And that's the meekness. So meekness is not just an ethical, moral attitude. Meekness is strong, very strong, which says, I don't want to have anything anymore for me, but let principle operate as idea, and that idea as me. Then one knows that the maximum of good is being worked out. And that's the idea. Did I put it over a little bit? Yeah? So think of it, that from this moment on we really could drop that old sense of Christian Science which tries to demonstrate with all one's power something which we have set out to demonstrate. And just drop it and say, after all, what is operating? Only the synonymous terms are operating, and those synonymous terms have an idea. And that's the only thing they want to bring out and to demonstrate. So let them do it. And let not interfere with God's working. Okay.